Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
This is Meta, a podcast about podcasts, and I'm Peter Wells. Each week I'll speak to podcasters from around the world to find the best new podcast for you to listen to. Today I'm speaking with Baratunde Dave Thurston. He's an Emmy-nominated host who has worked on The Onion, The Daily Show, he's worked in Obama's White House, and he's written the New York Times bestseller, How to Be Black. He's got two podcasts out this year. He's just finished a limited run season of a podcast called We're Having a Moment, which looks at the Black Lives Matter movement and the real change that he can feel in America at the moment. He's got a new podcast out at the moment called How to Citizen, and he's just a fantastic guest to talk to. I could have talked for hours, but unfortunately, we had to cut it off at some point. Of course, I started our conversation by asking, how did he get that amazing name?
Thank you for acknowledging the amazingness of my name. It is Baratunde Thurston. I got my name where most people do, from my parents, the repository of names that they hoard. And my parents wanted to accomplish something special. So my mother gave me this name Baratunde in part because it's based on a Yoruba name, Babatunde, which means one who is chosen, also means father returns. And she was trying to invoke the spirit of her grandfather. Rafiq is an Arabic name. It means companion. And combined Baratunde Rafiq was meant to make it difficult for me to board planes and deal with airport security.
Really forward thinking.
She really saw that coming. Thurston is a slave name. I don't know if you're familiar. We had this peculiar institution that set the stage for our entire nation's wealth and history. And Thurston was the name of the British bloke who my family belonged to at some point way back when.
I've read a little bit about that over the years. We'll get to your podcast series in a second, but can you give me a quick rundown of some of the other things you've done in your life, some places that you've worked, that kind of thing?
Yes, I survived living in Washington, D.C. in the 1980s. It's a huge accomplishment. It was the crime capital of our nation. I graduated college and high school and have survived up to this day without a criminal record, which is also exceedingly wonderful. I went to Harvard University, studied philosophy. I've worked for The Onion and The Daily Show. For a brief period, I worked in the corporate world doing something called consulting, which I still don't understand, but which they paid me for. And I think that's how it works. You don't understand it, and therefore you pay for it. It's a great business model if you can get it. And I've written a book. It's called How to Be Black. It's a comedic memoir of my coming of age, my coming of blackness in this society that we have here. And I'm a person who makes media, and I try to do so with a lens toward informing people, entertaining them, and moving them to act. I've got a great podcast called How to Citizen with Baratunde, and we are reclaiming this word citizen, reimagining it as a verb instead of a legal status, and inviting people to participate and reclaim our power. Turns out it's all up to us. Yeah, I've completed a short-run podcast series. It's a mini-series podcast called We're Having a Moment. And it's where I take a moment to explain and expand on this defining moment of race and revolution and pandemic here in the United States and also around the world. So it's a 6-part series, and it gets at the who and the why and the where might we go after this moment.
Looking at America from afar, I mean, we've always been very, very fascinated by America. You are the creator of all culture, and all roads lead to America.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. we've supported you in many wars that we've been very suspicious of over the years. But
that's,
you know,
right. Your Prime Minister Howard really backed us in that dubious Iraq war way back when. Yeah.
I've always
part of the coalition of the
willing
bamboozled. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought of us as remember that old Warner Brothers cartoon where there was the really big dog and then the tiny little yappy dog.
Yes.
We're the tiny little yappy dog. But that's fine. That's fine. I say that with love. But yeah, watching America from afar, it's always felt like a made up kind of place in some ways. And so it's always been, just for me at least, watching the politics, watching everything, you can not take it seriously. The last couple of years, I feel like it's suddenly become really, really serious. Like the things I'm seeing in America are really starting to trouble me, rather than something I can just kind of laugh off as I watch late night monologues. What does it feel like on the ground? Do you feel that this is actually a moment bigger than the standard kind of last 20 years or so?
In one important way, I do think this matters, but it isn't because America has changed. It's because more people can see what America has been. And, you know, 20 years ago, 200 years ago, we've faced inadequately our problems, our original sins with respect to the treatment of indigenous people and the enslaved people that we brought here, and so many other people who came of their own free will. And so what's happened this year is that the pandemic has forced us to look at something so many of us could ignore. And because there literally was nothing to look at, like they canceled sports. So we couldn't do that and we couldn't brunch. And so we had to stare into the gaping maw of white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And it's painful and it's shameful. But on the other side of that pain and that shame lies something called truth and maybe growth and maybe improvement. So yeah, it's felt different because more people are witnessing the things that have been happening. And I give a lot of credit to COVID-19 for that. I give partial credit to the current administration in terms of the federal office in this nation, the executive office, I should say, that has made no secret of its disdain for various people who were once considered part of America. Immigrants, brown people, certain religions, maybe women in general, kind of depends on the day. It's hard to tell. Yeah. But what's clear is that there's a lack of respect for a lot of the people who make up this country.
You know, Australia is not a perfect country by any means.
Wait, what? I'm sorry. You're not a perfect. I only do interviews with perfect countries. I need to go.
This is one of those things I've always wondered about America as well. And again, I say this with love. I've visited the country many, many times, and I'm always blown away by just...
Here comes the insult.
Exactly. I'm working up to it. But I'm always blown away by just the kind of positivity and optimism that you find in almost any person that you speak to. And yet I can't help but think, like, why? Why? Like I mean, I don't even... I mean, I like Australia. I like it when we win sport. You know, that's great. But I wouldn't defend to my death the belief systems that we have. I think our nation was founded on some bad ideas, and we've improved them over the time. And there was nothing exceptional about our founders or anything like that. Whereas it feels like sometimes when I'm speaking to an American and they're discussing their founding fathers or whatever else, it's like they're talking about Lord of the Rings. Like there's this level of bizarre mythology built into the American story that I always find really fascinating.
And is there a question in
no.
there? No. You just went
I'm just wondering, where does that come
country.
From? Like, where does that come from? Is that built in? Is that taught to you at a very early age? And
so I don't know how familiar you are with the United States of America. We were founded by Jesus Christ, strictly for the benefit of voluntary European immigrants of a certain level of wealth and beauty, to deliver freedom, property, and very, very rapidly prepared and so-called food into their gullets. So we're good at that. Now, America is founded by, in so many ways, people who think they are better than the lands they came from. They left places to create something better, for the most part. And certainly the people who wrote the story of the country fit that description. And that's if you go back to the 1600s or the 1920s or the 1980s. The refugees who come here think, I'm better than the place where the Civil War is happening. The entrepreneurs who come here think, I can make more money here rather than where I can in a nation with some other types of support systems. So it is ingrained in a lot of American identity that we are special because we are special. It's a rather circular logic, but it's self-fulfilling. And we are taught that. We are taught that we're number one, never exactly in a specific area that can be measured, but just broadly, we're number one. Mm-hmm. We're the greatest. And we like to laud our victories historically out there. So World War II, classic. You know, we play the greatest hits, and we're like, we defeated the Nazis. So we're going to ride that until the wheels fall off. Literally, our infrastructure is crumbling. The wheels are about to fall off. Mm-hmm. But we defeated Hitler. And we never mentioned the Russians and the 30 million Russians who died in that effort as well. But so for many of those reasons, I think we have a strongly defined ego in the United States. Yes.
That's a beautiful way to put it. But yeah.
let me add one more take there. I think theory. I might be coming up with a theory right now. So this country doesn't provide some of the things other quote unquote civilized nations do, like guaranteed healthcare, for example. Mm. And we don't do that in part because we tell ourselves a story that we don't deserve it. We have to earn it. So some of the givens in another society, we have to fight for. We have to earn it. And that proves our worth. So we're constantly proving ourselves to ourselves, you know, among ourselves. I don't know if I deserve to be paid a living wage. I feel like I should just work harder. I don't know if I deserve Medicare or healthcare. I feel like I should get more jobs, but then I'm not getting paid enough at the job. Well, it must be me. And in a nation built on individuality, especially of late, in the past 40 years, we carry a lot of pressure alone on ourselves. And what makes that bearable is the idea that we have a shot at getting all those things we won't say we deserve because we're special. And so you're special, you can do it. If you don't do it, you're amoral. Maybe you hate Jesus or the flag or you're a commie. I'm not sure. Something's wrong with you. But we in America are special and anybody can make it if they jump through all these hoops. And so I think there is something about the story we've told ourselves that's isolating in certain ways. Because we have to do these things alone, that's undeserving. We have to unlock the privileges that that other societies provide as a baseline. And all that's sellable because we're still so special, you see? And that's why we put ourselves through this, because you can do it, unless you can't.
Yeah.
We have a lottery system, and there are enough people who do well and advertise it, that it seems possible for us all.
But then there are some people who are born with like seven balls in their lottery wheel, and some people who are born with a million balls.
See, now you're bringing up old stuff and you're starting to talk about systems and history, and it's just really more complicating of the fact that some people got it, some people don't, and why can't you just accept that?
Peter. That's fair. Well, I mean, that's what I was originally getting around to, is that COVID-19 really seems to have found the pressure lines, the fissures in any system, and really brought them, really highlighted them. So in Victoria, one of the reasons why we're having a second outbreak, one of the things that has been identified for us is a lack of funding in aged care.
Yeah.
And then a lack of job security in the people who work in that sector. They can't afford to take a day off, so they're going to work even though they're sick, so they're spreading the virus. On paper, it is so obvious that people, you know, I work in, well, up until a couple of weeks ago, I worked in IT, and I had a very comfortable job that I could do from my desk. And so, of course, I was not in great threat of getting sick. But people who are working in low-income roles, in casual workforces where they don't have sick leave, they don't have these kind of things. And that's what I mean, is just that COVID-19 really has brought home the issues that you've been able to ignore for a very long time. And I think that that's what we're seeing in America.
Absolutely. It's beautifully said. COVID-19 is a truth serum, and it does not care about the story you've been telling yourself. It doesn't care about your mythology. It will reveal the shambles, the cracks, the crevices, the canyons that exist in your society. And, you know, I think for me, one of the things that's so revealing of the moment is we have capacity in the United States. It's what's so infuriating and embarrassing about where we're at. We have the money. We have the manufacturing capacity. We have the human talent. We have not had the leadership to organize all that to protect us. And that's the primary job of a government, is just protect your people. Mm. I don't need a hug. I need to live. It's pretty basic. And this government couldn't get it together. In fact, went out of its way to get things untogether, to sow chaos, to spread disinformation, to intervene in the process of getting N95 masks to healthcare workers. And then on the flip side, you know, you want to see where the priorities are. So, okay, so we couldn't get the masks to the healthcare workers. But when people take to the streets because the folks charged with protecting and serving them are actually shooting them, those very same people are faced with violence by the object of their protest. And those law enforcement people are covered in masks. I mean, they're launching chemical weapons that we don't generally use in war, but they've got them aplenty, and they've got batons, and they've got tanks. Tanks! Mm. Why do you have a tank? And they've got gas. They're prepared for COVID-19 times 19. So you've got all the equipment in the world to suppress the right to peaceable assembly, but you have nothing for the frontline health workers or the involuntary frontline workers in the grocery stores and the bus drivers and the sewage workers and the delivery people who are barely keeping us all together, them and whoever created Zoom. That's all we have. That's all we have. And I don't know, somebody must have put some money, because Zoom has stayed up this whole time, and I'm starting to get very suspicious. I've never used technology this much without it breaking, and there are billions of us using it. So what did they know, and when did they know it? That's my question.
That's a good question. That is a very good question.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
As you watch all of this play out in your cities, how do you maintain optimism?
Yeah. Sometimes I don't. That's my secret. Don't maintain optimism. I think that is an impossible bar to live by at every particular moment. There are times when I am just broken, when I am furious, when I need to take a walk or do some push-ups, or watch something very, very stupid on television. And I mean things that lower one's IQ, just to check out from the amount of pain that's happening. And then when I do find myself back, which is more often than not, I maintain optimism in a couple of ways. I look at the possibilities that we have at this moment. There is a wonderful poet, an activist, and author named Valerie Kaur, K-A-U-R. She's in the very first episode of my How to Citizen podcast. And in December 2016, shortly after the election, she faced a large audience and said, "What if this darkness that we find ourselves in is not the darkness of the tomb, but the darkness of the womb? And what if our country isn't dying, but it's being reborn?" And birth, as anyone who's ever been near it knows, is painful and messy and loud. But on the other side is new life. And this is what it feels like to regrow, to give rebirth to your country. That fills me. That poem kept me going for the past 4 years and the past 4 months in equal measure. And then lastly, I humble myself before history. I would be so arrogant to think everything should be good now. I'm here. Says who? Why do I get it so much better than anyone else who ever lived in the history of time? No, I'm lucky to take part in this thing called life, and I will do what I can to contribute to making it better for myself and those who come after. But I would not be so greedy and impatient as to think it all must be right now because I'm here. that's a little too much. So it helps to remember the struggles of others and the long arc of history that will far exceed my timeline.
And with the election year, with the election coming up in November, what do you currently feel is happening in terms of that election? Are we looking at four more years? Basically, that's all I want to know.
Oh, you're asking for a prediction. No, yeah. I will not do that. But I will share my thoughts and what I think is on the line and what I hope will happen. Predictions, who knows? What I see happening right now is I'm somewhat of a partisan. Now, I'm a registered Democrat. I'm a self-identified liberal progressive person. But trying to set that aside, I think we have a challenge to the legitimacy of our democracy going on here right now. Mm-hmm. And that's on the ballot. So this isn't really like a classic election. This isn't like, what are Joe Biden's tax policies and what are Donald Trump's tax policies? And let me just build a spreadsheet and see where I make more money. This is not that election. This is not, let's look at their records of policy. No. There is in office right now someone who is only in office for himself. And there is enabling him an entire political party, one half of our political establishment that says, we are good with everything this person has done. Now, we would tell our children the opposite in any way in life, exams, yard play, housework. We would not tolerate this behavior from one of our own, but we're going to claim him and we're going to impose him on you. So no, this is just a right wrong election. As Joe Biden put it in the Democratic National Convention recently, this is light versus dark. This is Jedi stuff. And that's what I see as the choice that we have. Do we want to live in a democracy or not? And if we do, then we've got to flex the meaning of that word, people power, Greek origins of democracy, and remind ourselves that we're in charge here. Because if we don't, then we will lose even more power and it will be a very unrecognizable country. And the history has been harsh, but I do fear what further unchecked access to power will look like in the hands of this particular human being who only knows his own interests. So we'll vote him out, or we won't, or we will, and he'll fight, and maybe he'll send his goons back into the streets, and then we'll have to decide, are we going to occupy the streets? Like, there's 1,000 scenarios. What I want is, here are the dreams I have, besides of like eating in a restaurant again, which is a great dream. Sometimes I have dreams where I'm eating at a restaurant, and I'm at the restaurant, and then I order from another restaurant while I'm at the restaurant, just to show that I can. That's my primary dream. Mm-hmm. But my secondary dream is that we exceed the margin of doubt so overwhelmingly in the results, so embarrassingly, that there is no question. That we tried it, we did the crazy thing, we got a little nuts. America got a little nuts, had a little too much to drink, got a little high on the authoritarianism, and we're coming back, and we're gonna not do that anymore. Because we realize that it has led to the deaths of over 170,000 of our fellow members of society, and that is too high a price to pay.
Looking again as someone who watches America as a TV show on my screens each night, what I'm hoping exactly is that the defeat is so amazing that first of all he can't claim any wrongdoing by the post office or whatever organization he's trying to defund. But secondly, that it becomes such a massive wake-up call, like you said, to the enablers. Because it's not just Trump, is it? It's not just...
Person can't do all this. Our system is literally set up so one person can't do all this. There was a person doing all this. King George, I think his name was. And he raised the price of tea and we kicked out the whole British... We set up a whole system of divided government, of brilliance, to our earlier comments about our arrogance, somewhat partially well-learned, that one person should not have this much power. And the brokenness of our current system is like, the founders didn't count on the Republican Party behaving in this way. They didn't count on the Senate a co-equal part of the government to accede to authoritarianism so easily. No yeah. protest whatsoever. So that's the problem isn't the president. The problem are the people who don't see the president as a problem, who have the power yeah. delegated by us to check him. Mm.
And to be fair, the founders probably never thought of Fox News either, which as an Australian, TikTok, I've got to say.
Yeah, or yeah. TikTok, or, you know, USB microphones. I mean, there's a lot. Mm. For all their alleged genius, they didn't foresee most of this. So just saying.
Well, look, you know, we're all rooting for you over here. We really are hoping, because, you know, like I said, you are our big brother. You know, we look up to you. We hope that you get through this one, because it's been a bit of a rough one.
Well, listen, I have something to say, man. Like, you know, in the podcast, we're having a moment that's a lot about race. And one of the things I say at the end of that is what I want to see is not that the newly awakened people to the racial strife in our country and in the world get involved because they want to help the people of color. They want to help the indigenous people. Like, you do it because you want to be a part of a world where you benefit too, where, like, you see the interest as aligned. And I think as a non-American, as an Aussie, like, I appreciate your good wishes. It's not just for me. Like, mm-mm. our crazy affects you. You know, totally. you're physically far closer to Kim Jong-un than we are. So like, what we do matters. You're closer to China than mm-hmm. we are physically. And we're in this intertwined global economy, and the global pandemic is running amok. So if we don't get this under control, that hurts your economy too.
Absolutely.
So do whatever you legally can to help us out, which includes moral support and talking to people like me, I guess. Thank you for talking to me.
No, thank you. Thank you. And I just realized we're 25 minutes in and we haven't actually talked about the podcast yet. So
yeah.
Can you please give me a quick rundown on the podcast, How to Citizen, and the overarching themes?
Yeah, the overarching message of How to Citizen is that we need to reclaim this word citizen and make it a verb. That citizenship means participation. It means living in relationship with others and realizing how interconnected we are. It means understanding the power we have to vote and do so much more than that to affect outcomes. And it means doing this on behalf of the many and not the few. Otherwise, you're a sociopath. So this show is showing us how to practice citizenship. So I sit down with people doing it, not theoreticians, folks on the ground working in their communities to make change. And then we give listeners and viewers and the whole audience things they can do. I've made this show in many ways for myself because I've been so frustrated at consuming so much horribleness and not being offered anything to do about it. So there are many things we can do. This show will focus on that. There are many people doing it. This show will highlight them. And at the end of each episode, I guarantee you will feel better, not worse.
Do you feel that kind of grassroots change happening around you? I mean, we see some of it on the news, but it's hard to tell exactly what it's like over there. Does it feel different, I guess, is what I'm trying to say?
I do feel it. And, you know, we're having conversations about how we use police forces and money here. And they're going well past conversations. People are deep in the budgets of our cities, where we realize the number one budget item in so many U.S. cities is to the law enforcement department, to police. So mathematically, we live in a police state. That's not me being judgy. That's just literally looking at the numbers. Mm. And that is not sitting right with people who think, oh, maybe there's other ways we can solve some of these problems. Not all. Some will still require police, but not helping old ladies across the street, not being a crossing guard, not maybe noise complaints. There's homelessness, a lot of other issues. So that level of engagement and savvy in the process has gone way past the hashtag, has gone past the significance of street protest in a pandemic, which is a huge commitment of citizen action that I think, you know, gets underappreciated at times. So I'm seeing it. And then the last piece I would say is I'm seeing people take to not the streets, but to themselves. I see a lot of people engaging with themselves and asking, who do I want to be? Who am I? Reading different things, interrogating themselves a little bit, looking at their own communities and households and personal choices. And that's where the change has to start. It can be very easy to point fingers far off, whether that's Washington, D.C., or some company that upset you, or some celebrity who said something, or the thing you saw on Twitter. But what's happening on your block? What's happening in your church? What's happening in your house? That's the real work, at least the first layer of it. And I'm feeling, just from amongst my friends, like, who were buying all these sourdough books, and now they're buying How to Be an Anti-Racist. Like, that's a shift. Now, How to Make Anti-Racist Sourdough, I still don't know why someone hasn't written that book, because it's the best of both worlds.
Oh, man. Yes, yes. That is a beautiful way to sum it all up. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a great chat. And I can't say enough that I really do love America. I get swept up in its exceptionalism every time I'm there, because it is a wonderful place. And yeah, I really do hope that you get through this moment.
This and all the ones that will come. Getting through is part of living. So thank you for having me. Good luck with everything y'all are dealing with too. I know things are not 100% everywhere in the world, and you have your challenges with your first inhabitants. You have challenges with fires and climate. Mm-hmm. And obviously with COVID-19. So good luck to you and all the people of Australia. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. My thanks again to Baratunde Thurston. And next week we have former Prime Minister Julia Gillard, which is just a strange thing for me to say out loud. Here is a quick snippet of the conversation I had with her.
I like a number of podcasts that are focused on women. I appeared on as a guest on the podcast Shameless, but I very much like that podcast too. So all sorts.
I actually heard you on The Guilty Feminist, and you are incredibly funny. Have you thought about a career in stand-up? Because you were on fire on that episode.
Thank you for that. But no, a career in stand-up does not beckon. Thank you for the suggestion, but I won't be taking it up.
Thanks again for listening. And if you dig it, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts, or even better, tell a friend. Podcast art by Lauren Watson. Post-production by James Smith. And a big thanks to the Acast team in Sydney for convincing me to make this series. My name is Peter Wells. Stay safe, wear a mask, and I'll speak to you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I feel I've taken far too much of your time. Try to get onto compulsory voting. That's really good. Take that from Australia.
Also, we'll import your gun policies while we're at it too.
Yeah. I mean, we've got some issues, but we've not nailed those two things.
Yeah, but I think America's a nation of guns with a few people at this point to just, you know, sort of restock the ammunition and keep them loaded. That's part of the weirdness of this country.
Yeah, it's weird that all those people who said that they held onto their guns in case tyranny came, where are they?
So it turns out, now this is important. Maybe this is like a bonus round on your show. I don't remember how it's structured, but if you want to do like a blooper reel or extras. We had protests before the Black Lives Matter protests.
I remember, yeah.
And that was a lot of people with military gear. And
the Karens that wanted yogurt.
Yeah. They wanted yogurt. They wanted their hair styled. And they wanted to go to the gym. And they flexed all the guns that they could muster to prove that they would not succumb to the tyranny of split ends. And I get it. I get, as a man who needs a haircut right now and desperately so, I appreciate that this is an audio interview. And I guess the people with the guns, they just got exhausted by the hair salon protest. But they'll be out any moment now to stand against the tyranny. I just have to believe that.
I'm sure they will.
They're just waiting until it gets really bad. Mm-mm. Like until federal agents kidnap people in unmarked vehicles, for example. You know, the stuff of their conspiratorial nightmares. If that starts to happen, then I'm sure they'll show up to defend their fellow Americans.
It's a fascinating world. I love this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, see ya.
Yeah.